Welcome to On Spec, the podcast that brings you big, little documentaries from far corners of the world. I'm your guest host, Nadine Gorey. This season, we have explored many different types of borders, those of countries in conflict and those designed to keep immigrants out. But what about when a wall literally divides a city between rich and poor? What impact does that have on a wider society? The On Spec podcast we're about to bring you, A Nation's Two Sides, explores these questions. Listen now to this compelling story from the megacity of Lima in Peru. It is a tale of a city divided, but also a country, and how the 2021 Peruvian presidential elections showed class, racial, and historical schisms in Peru.
"11 years ago, I walked out of the Lima airport with nothing but a tiny backpack and took in the city for the first time. The noise and sheer scale hit me in the face. Shouting fruit vendors, sweaty taxi drivers, and fluffy street dogs. It was chaos, and I loved it. I'm from Finland. I came to Peru to study linguistics, specifically the Andean language Quechua. It's one of more than 70 different indigenous languages and dialects spoken here. Getting here felt like entering the Tower of Babel. I couldn't wait to dive in. Now I'm one of over 11 million Lima residents. Today it feels like home. But I've also had a lot to learn living in Peru. Things that have humbled me. The biggest lessons have been about the walls, invisible and real, that divide society. This is a story about how we all fit in. It's a sweltering hot afternoon in Villa María del Triunfo, one of the large districts in Lima. Rows of modest houses line the hilltops and laundry hangs outside in the sunshine. This is where Carlos Inostroza was born and raised. Carlos is in his 50s, with short black hair and a fit belt. He's funny, talkative, and always on the phone. On the day we meet to tour his neighborhood, he's sweating in a business suit. He's a little worried someone might steal his car. That's because Villa María is a huge area with a lot of different neighborhoods. Basically, the higher up these rolling hills you climb, the more poverty you see. Villa María's poorest residents live in tiny wooden shacks at the very top. The sun beams down on us without respite, because there are no trees or plants, no roads or other basic services either. This is one of the poorest areas of Lima. Just on the other side of the hilltop is one of the richest. Carlos is leading me along a short wall topped with barbed wire. It's the physical line between two very different worlds. Here, lush green gardens dot the horizon. I can see a golf course, shining pools, and luxury mansions. This is La Molina. Less than a mile away, Villa María's residents survive on around $3 a day. But many of La Molina's residents don't know that. Many don't even know this wall exists. Carlos can remember the very first time he saw it.
Claro, cuando llegué aquí el año 2015, vine a jugar fulbito, entonces cuando me acerqué un poco entre el límite.
It was 2015, and he had come to play soccer at a field on the peak of Villa María. From there, he had a clear view on the wall snaking through the ridge side. The neighboring municipality had constructed the wall here. From his vantage on the soccer field that day, Carlos felt like the wall was this physical reminder of all the class divisions sitting just under the surface in Lima. He hated how it seemed to condone all those rifts between rich and poor, have and have not. He wanted to do something about it, so he sued La Molina municipality to have it removed. He claims it violates Villa Maria's residents' right to free transit. The move has made him pretty famous around here.
Y la gente, pues, generalmente la gente que venía de Villa María, gente que vive en las alturas de los cerros, son de baja condición socioeconómica.
The people who live in Villa María, in the hills' highest areas, are generally people of low socioeconomic status. They are the ones going to work to La Molina as security guards, as housemates, as street vendors.
They are essential workers, he says. Yet still, La Molina wants to restrict their transit.
Vamos, hay bastante racismo y discriminación aquí en el Perú.
There is a lot of racism and discrimination here in Peru.
He says the wall in Villa María is a real barrier with real consequences. But it's also a symbol for other invisible barriers in Peru. Divisions between those of indigenous and European descent, urban and rural, rich and poor. Carlos says all of that was crystallized during the presidential election last year. A candidate from the far right and a candidate from the radical left faced off. Their supporters did too. In protests that flared up ahead of election day, Peruvians on both sides hurled insults, eggs, and even stones at each other. So, how did we get here? Let's start from the beginning.
Chilling numbers that paint a better picture of just how devastating the COVID-19 pandemic has been in Peru. On Monday, authorities in the South...
It's June 2021. Peru is in the midst of a devastating COVID surge that would take the lives of 180,000 people. But the presidential election is heating up too.
Al candidato Pedro Castillo, de Perú Libre. Tiene usted 2 minutos para su exposición. Adelante.
Buenas noches, compatriotas. Buenas noches, Perú.
Keiko Fujimori and Pedro Castillo, two candidates from opposite sides of the political divide, are facing each other in a debate. With COVID restrictions in place, Peruvians are tuning in from home.
Los sucesos de violencia que ocurrieron el día de ayer.
First, Fujimori accuses Castillo of hate, division, and class struggle.
Mensajes de odio, de división, de lucha de clase.
She says his words promote violence. Then she reaches under the podium and takes out a stone.
Esta es una de las piedras que tiraron a nuestra caravana.
She raises it in the air to show it to the cameras. She says a day before, Castillo's supporters threw this stone at her supporters during a march.
Yo sé barrer una escuela donde no hay un personal de servicio.
Castillo ignores her. Instead, he looks straight into the camera and addresses his supporters.
Nosotros los del campo, nosotros los del Ande.
He talks about the left-wing policies he wants to enact and his own background as a peasant.
En un país rico. Palabra de maestro.
That's his word. Then he accuses Fujimori of corruption.
Pero esto tiene culpables directos. El Fujimorismo con 10 años de gobierno.
These debates, and the fact that these two figures are on stage together at all, signals something big in Peruvian politics.
Las diferentes provincias de Junín, a quienes he visitado, y les he preguntado abiertamente.
See, Keiko Fujimori represents the far right, the business class, and powerful elites. And she comes from a powerful and long-standing political family in Peru.
Yo estoy seguro de que la historia sabrá juzgar. Sin mezquindad, la acción y la obra de mi gobierno en este campo.
She's the daughter of former President Alberto Fujimori, an authoritarian ruler who started the political movement Fujimorismo. He's in prison today on charges of corruption and crimes against humanity. During her father's first term in 1994, Keiko became Peru's youngest first lady. She was just 19. This happened after her mother and former first lady, Susana Higuchi, accused Alberto Fujimori, her husband and Keiko's father, of torture and corruption.
Ante tanta corrupción, ante promesas incumplidas.
Keiko went on to be a congresswoman.
Tenemos que generar empleos. Y para eso hemos dicho, haremos miles de obras.
By the time she gets here, debating Castillo, she has already narrowly lost two presidential bids in past elections. This is one of her campaign videos.
Voy a darle mi apoyo total a nuestros hermanos agricultores.
Her face, voice, and name are everywhere in Peru.
Lamentar las declaraciones del señor Pedro Castillo.
The Fujimoris have close ties to media companies. In 2011, Keiko allegedly bribed the head of one company with suitcases filled with over $200,000 in exchange for supporting her campaign. But in the 2021 elections, Peruvians have many options. 18 candidates are in the running. Keiko was poised to be on top, but she ended up competing against the most unlikely candidate of them all, Castillo.
Bueno, gracias. Yo soy un profesor, soy una persona del campo, de origen de una familia muy humilde. Soy el tercero de.
He's a primary school teacher and union leader from a tiny mountain village in Cajamarca, deep in the Peruvian Andes. That he made it to the presidential runoffs shocked the nation. He didn't come from the elites. He grew up in one of Peru's poorest areas and helped his illiterate parents work the land. In this campaign video, Castillo is working on a corn plot in the countryside with a farmer. He looks comfortable and at home here, because he is. Working the land is what he knows. He's wearing a pair of blue sweatpants and a baseball cap, cutting into lush green corn plants with a metal hoe. He turns to the farmer behind him. My grandfather used to say that the poor are the stairs used by the rich to move up and down, Castillo says. What the rich have is made with the poor's work. Castillo almost always wears a wide-brimmed straw hat. It's typical for people in the countryside. His supporters walk by foot, door to door, to gather support. In Peru's provinces, Castillo's campaign events are like concerts. In this one, he's addressing a crowd of people from the roof of a cement building. He's popular in rural mountainous areas, like the provinces near Lake Titicaca and Machu Picchu. He also has his supporters in Lima. But Castillo's critics say he doesn't have the experience to become president. During his campaign, people spew racist comments against him on social media.
No hay ninguna capacidad de gobierno. Entonces es bien irresponsable. Para mí es una incapacidad, inclusive antropológica, ¿no? Señor,
in this interview on national television, the right-wing radical politician Rafael López Aliaga said that Castillo is not capable of ruling the country because he has, quote, anthropological incapacity. Aliaga is a dangerous figure, often compared to Donald Trump. But he's not alone. Many ordinary people in Lima make fun of Pedro Castillo's accent. Some connect a rural accent to uneducated and backward people.
Primeramente doy gracias a Dios. Bueno, acá no hay ninguna festejación, como usted ha dicho, pero sí vamos a doblar rodillas nosotros con mis hijos y vamos a agradecer a Dios porque finalmente.
People also criticized Castillo's wife, Lilia Paredes, and the way she dresses. She usually wears Andean-style, modest clothes and has her hair in a long, braided ponytail, like other women in the countryside. In Peru, we are used to seeing the people in power wearing formal, expensive-looking, Western-style clothing. It's a contrast. His rise to prominence was a shock to some in the country. I asked Carlos, the lawyer we met earlier, why Castillo appealed to people.
People are not choosing Castillo. What they want is change. Many don't feel represented by Castillo because he's a rural school teacher. But the thing is that people want change.
Pero el tema es la gente quiere un cambio. Quiere dejar de ser esclavo de los intereses bancarios.
Indigenous people represent 30% of Peruvians. But they're more likely to live in poverty and have little access to education or political power. It's a divide that seeps into everyday life here. I speak Spanish with an accent and make grammatical errors. But as a white foreigner, I have status. Skin color decides which side of the invisible wall you're on. Like a chameleon, I can sneak into different spaces inside the city. The elite Keiko supporters accept me because of my white skin and green eyes. I'm spared the sting of racism against dark-skinned Peruvians. And poorer people invite me to their homes because they believe I'm harmless. Many Peruvians think that people from richer countries are more honest than their own. This internalized racism creates a lack of trust among Peruvians. In fact, in a trust index, Peru rates among the lowest in Latin America. I find it sad, but sometimes I do the same. Many times I find myself distrusting others. But these divisions have a colonial history. Spain controlled Peru for almost 300 years. Many of the social structures and power imbalances that were created then remain in place today. People who support Castillo wave rainbow-colored flags called huipala, similar to the flag believed to have been used by the Incas. It's a symbol of memory and indigenous resistance, of pain, of loss, but also of hope.
Si te presentes, por favor. Sí, claro. Bueno, yo soy de Piura, de la ciudad de Talara, que está en el norte.
Tania Lucía Ramírez Farias is a sociologist who has researched the social divisions in the city.
Exacto. Ajá. Es que en mi ex barrio, en Los Olivos.
In my old neighborhood, Los Olivos, there are many fences because there was a lot of crime. So the fastest way to fight against crime, or beyond fighting against crime, just protecting your family and your neighbors, is to install fences and getting organized to have a night watch or hiring private security.
Tania believes the weakness of the state causes rampant crime. Peruvians are used to taking the law into their own hands because the authorities aren't able to protect them, she says. You see this outside the cities as well. Since the 60s and 70s, many rural areas have had rondas campesinas, peasant militias, to protect villages from crime. Castillo himself says he was a rondero, a member of one of these militias, before becoming a school teacher. Crime exists in a vacuum of legitimate power because of poverty, Tania says. That's not just in Peru, but many countries with corrupt governments. There is a Latin American expression, mano dura, or a firm hand. The idea behind it is that repression is necessary for public security. Police and military abuse become accepted as a way to protect people. It's one of the reasons Alberto Fujimori, Keiko's father, rose to such prominence.
Creo que una de las fuerzas del neoliberalismo, es decir,
Tania says, for decades now, post-colonial Peru has chosen a neoliberal economic model. Services that were once public have been reduced or privatized. The result has benefited a small group and a few companies, but a third of Peru still lives in poverty.
In other cities, public transportation is a democratic space, where you see office workers and working class people travel in the same metro. We haven't seen that here yet.
Wherever I talk to Peruvians, everybody seems to agree that quality education will improve their lives. A better education is a way to climb the social ladder and a better future. And children are the hope.
Creemos importante que la educación es un derecho fundamental. Como derecho, quiere decir que no habrá discriminación en el marco de la, de la.
One of Castillo's big campaign promises is to raise investment in education. Peru invests only 4% of its GDP in public education, one of the lowest in South America.
Porque acá la educación privada es bastante extensiva, incluso en los barrios populares, pero siempre hay.
Here, private education is common, even in lower-income neighborhoods. But there are elite schools where having money is not enough. There is social mobility, but we still have the factor of who is white or who is not, or whose families are historically wealthy. Elite schools, for example, you can have money because your parents worked extremely hard, but if you don't have a network, you are out of luck.
This made me think of the phrases I often hear in Peru. Don't you know who I am? Or, you don't know who you're talking to. Because influential people use it to justify corruption. They mean their personal connection with judges, politicians, or the police, so that they can avoid fines or punishment. But Tania is optimistic. She says, despite historical wounds and colonial legacy, things are slowly changing.
There have been changes. There's more democratization. Something positive is that there are citizens who are outraged about corruption. So there are changes because of inertia, but there is also more social action. Using social media, you can denounce misconduct faster.
Maybe that's how Castillo was given a chance in the election. But the road there was full of landmines from Peru's political past and current anxieties about the rest of Latin America. I'm at an anti-communist protest near my home in Lima. A female protester cries. She says her husband was in the armed forces and fought against Shining Path, a leftist terrorist group. If Peruvians forget the past and choose communism in these elections, she says, Peruvians will become like Venezuelans. We will have to migrate and become beggars, she says. Castillo's critics fear that a left-wing president could lead Peru in the direction of Venezuela. The reminder of Venezuela's failed socialism is very visible for Peruvians. Venezuela has seen an exodus of its citizens over the last several years. Many have come to Peru, and those who are the worst off are living rough, begging for money on street corners and washing windshields at the traffic lights. During the 80s and 90s, the Maoist-inspired terrorist group Sendero Luminoso, or Shining Path, waged war against the Peruvian state. It was a bloody conflict that cost over 70,000 lives, including those from left-wing parties, Peru's ruling class, and everyday people, basically everyone who didn't support them. Police captured its leader, Abimael Guzmán, in 1992, and Shiny Pat's threat diminished. But small remnants of the group persist to this day. It's a dark episode Peruvians haven't forgotten. And at these protests, all of that baggage is raining down on Castillo. Listen to us, Castillo. We are going to take the presidential palace back. Long live Peru, the speeches say. Castillo does not call himself a communist, but the right-wing campaign tries its best to make him look like one. The thing is, that's the same language many of Castillo's supporters use, too. There's this other half, posing a threat to the well-being of ordinary people. Maybe it shouldn't come as much of a surprise to anyone. It's happening in political arenas across the globe. But I'm struck by how easily media and politics can pit everyday people against each other. At protests leading up to the elections, police use concrete barriers to divide the two sides. They throw color bombs and tomatoes at each other across the barriers. Fujimori supporters are dressed smartly. I see a woman wearing Louis Vuitton. Castillo supporters wear red collars and straw hats. They wave banknotes in the air, yelling that Keiko is corrupt. As a journalist, I walk freely down the middle in the narrow alley formed by riot shields and police horses. On either side, I can hear people insulting each other, calling each other names. I listen. The noise, the drumming, the shouting is intense. It is frightening. I am so close I can look people in the eyes and wonder if they might attack me. Then, a bang. An explosion. A fight starts between the most aggressive protesters. The police throw tear gas canisters at the crowd. The canisters explode with a hissing sound. Gas burns my eyes. The smell reminds me of mustard. The crowd runs away from the gas, but I try to get closer to get good photos. I shoot photos until I can't breathe anymore. The division and anger at this protest is palpable. These walls between Peruvians seem insurmountable. And then... Castillo wins the election on 6th of June. The streets of Lima are filled with his cheering supporters. Here, a victorious Castillo addresses his supporters from a balcony in downtown Lima. This is a historic moment, but can he unite this divided country? I asked Carlos, the lawyer we met in Villa María at the beginning of this story.
Throughout our history, a small group of people owned all of Peru, and owned not only the land, but also the people working on it. Workers were practically slaves. So you want to work the land? I will give you food in exchange. They had no salaries or social benefits. In practice, they were slaves.
As he talks, Carlos points toward the rolling hills surrounding us in Villa María. These were the indentured servants, he says. Carlos' family is from the Quechua-speaking Ayacucho region, which was hard hit by Shining Path's violence. It's something he still craves. He joined the army in his 20s and fought against the group. Agrarian workers were treated like animals, he says. If they got sick, they died, and the landowners didn't take care of them. My father told me this. We climb further up the hill. I'm gasping for air, but Carlos hikes up easily. When the recorder is off, he tells me he once saw the remains of Shining Path victims. He says the group used a bakery to get rid of the bodies. Both Shining Path and the Peruvian Armed Forces committed human rights crimes. He says that is why so many people from countryside areas, hardest hit by violence, fled to Lima, to places like Villa María. They built a home with cardboard and plywood on a tiny piece of empty land. And they stayed. Shantytowns were born out of rural displacement. His own parents did that long before the internal conflict. For them, it was about seeking a better life. They came from Ayacucho with almost nothing. His father didn't speak Spanish, only the indigenous language Quechua.
Si mi papá no hubiese venido, yo hubiese sido un agricultor más en Ayacucho. Claro, sí, completamente.
If they had not come, I would have been one more poor farmer in Ayacucho, he says.
En la misma miseria de los que ahora están en provincia, ¿no?
Residents of places like Villa María are often indigenous farmers, just like Castillo. It's part of why Carlos hopes the new president can bring unity. But then he tells me something surprising. Here in Villa María, where Carlos grew up, the majority of people actually support Keiko. It's because of her father's legacy. Despite his corruption charges, many remember Alberto Fujimori as the great leader who ended the internal armed conflict and started social programs in the area. It reminds me of a saying that I hear often in Peru when people talk about politicians. Roba pero hace obras, which means steals but develops public facilities, such as football fields, public parks, or bridges. Still, Carlos supports Castillo. He says too much fake information is spread about him. He believes a Castillo administration would have more equal distribution of wealth, and points out that rampant inequality was one of the reasons that allowed Shining Path to grow in the first place. Education mobilized Carlos. He tells me that's why he wants to help Villa María residents improve their lives. He lobbies politicians for basic services for shantytowns and organizes food donations. He also provides pro bono legal advice. And of course, there's also the lawsuit he has out against the wall itself, dividing wealthy La Molina from poor Villa María. Carlos stops by the stone barrier in question. He glances over the barbed wire, picks up a few stones, and throws them over to the other side. A few months ago, Castillo was accused of moral incapacity and almost impeached over it. Peru's opposition parties failed to get the votes to do it, but it was the second time they tried. Castillo's short term has been turbulent. He's gone through four cabinets. One of his prime ministers only lasted 3 days on the job. And just like in the run-up to the elections, his critics say, this rural school teacher is unqualified for the job. I wanted to know what Carlos thought of all this, so I called him again this month. Carlos tells me not much has changed. Peru continues as it always has, he says, at least when it comes to Castillo. But Carlos himself? He's become famous overnight. His name is all over the news thanks to a new lawsuit he filed. This time it was against the mayor of Lima, Jorge Muñoz. Carlos accused him of corruption. Last month, he was removed from office. Carlos says it triggered a political earthquake. Carlos says on the national level, Castillo has been a disappointment for everyone. Those who once supported him now protest against him. But in Villa María, we are continuing the social and political work here, he says. That's why, with Muñoz removed, Carlos wants to keep going in the place he grew up. This time, as Villa María's mayor, he launched his own campaign this month. For OnSpec, I'm Cuca María Ajocas in Lima, Peru.
A Nation's Two Sides was reported by Cuca María Ajocas. She's originally from Finland, but lives in Peru. It was produced by Oscar Durand. Story editing by Fariba Nawa, Alisa Resnick, and myself, Nadine Gori. Audio mixing and sound design by Oscar Durand. Voiceovers by Oscar Durand and Colleen Fitzgerald. Archival sound from Christian Sierra. Our journalism is supported by the IJ for EU Fund. But we have a favour to ask you, too. We need your help. If you like listening to our stories from across the world, please consider becoming a patron and helping to support OnSpec's independent journalism in future. You can find out how to become a patron on our website, www.onspecpodcast.com.